B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
For a greater look for both local and national, a Temple Owl, a Philadelphian, our good friend Kevin Negandhi joins us from ESPN right now. Kevin, good morning, brother.
Mark, Trey, Bob, good morning, guys.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Kev.
I told you I'm not going to bury the lead this time. I made a mistake on Twitter. You appropriately corrected me. The Temple Owls win in double OT over UConn last night. How about that?
Mark, you're trying to make up for a big miss.
You're damn right I am. I am. Damn right I am.
Especially when you're an owl, especially considering how ugly that game was and how they needed a W after the Villanova game. But we made amends, and it was a great observation by you that, you know, overtime wins by the Sixers, Flyers, and Temple. And honestly, like, all three of those games are games that are, you grind them out, and you need to grind them out in the middle of the season or towards the back end of the season. And the thing that stood out to me for the Sixers, I made a comment about this on Twitter last night, that last night's Sixers win, especially in the fourth quarter and overtime, when you're watching Alec Burks and you're watching Milton making plays and they're on the floor as they, you know, were trying to figure out the whole Al Horford role and spacing, and Ben's not playing and Tobias is doing everything he can. Get on the backs of your superstars, like the Eagles did with Carson Wentz and a bunch of guys that we didn't expect at the beginning of the season. That's what the Sixers did late in that game. Get on the back of Joel Embiid, let him carry you, and then you're going to get some help from guys that I don't think anybody a month ago was going to assume that Alec Burks is going to play a huge role in a game that I felt like they needed to win heading into Milwaukee.
Let me ask this, because you have such a unique perspective, Kevin, because you're a local guy. You're still very much tied in here. Your passion is still here in Philadelphia, but you work, obviously, on the national scene. So I ask you this question as a kind of a double agent here. Who is Joel Embiid? And probably more importantly, what is Joel Embiid?
Man, I don't know. You know, as a guy that considers Joel as my favorite current Philly athlete, my favorite, currently, and the guy that I know day in and day out, at least in previous years, that he was going to give us 100% when he was on the floor, something that I related to Allen Iverson. I don't know. I think there's an immaturity that we need to still figure out. He wants to be the man. He has to understand that being the man means being the man every single night, not being the man when he wants to be the man, you know, and that's a different role. And I think there's the one thing that when you look at Philadelphia and the way this team plays so well at home is because I think the fans hold everybody, not just Joel, hold everybody playing accountable. And I've already heard, you know, oh, the boos last night. You know what? We boo because we care. And I'm going to say that till I die. And we will hold you accountable if you're not holding up your end of the bargain. And that's the difference between being a superhero in Philadelphia and a star. If you are a talented player who gives it every single night, we will ride or die for you every single day, no matter what it is. But if you show that you don't want to give it 100% every night, we're going to start to see the cracks. And Joel needs to hold himself accountable. And, you know, that goes to also this coaching staff holding everybody accountable on the road. Because on the road, the only people that are accountable are the 15 players in the coaching staff, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the crowd. And when you're at home, if you slip up, you will be held accountable and in check. And they needed to be held accountable with that terrible second quarter. And there was no excuse for it. Mm-hmm. And they can't afford to do this on the road. This is how I explained this whole team. They're immature at certain times, and they think things are coming easy to them. And you can't do that day in and day out if you want to be considered the best team, at least in the East.
Speaking with Kevin Negandhi of ESPN and Temple University's own Kevin Negandhi. Kevin, so I'm going to ask you the same question then, but not about Joel Embiid, about Ben Simmons. What is Ben Simmons?
You know, one thing I get from Ben Simmons, the guy that wants to continue to grow every single night. He wants to get better. He's already a defensive superstar. And I know one thing about Ben is if you look at his track record, he's going to try to play as much as he can. And when he plays, he's going to give it his all every single time. Now, there is a certain thing about Ben where each person's different. He doesn't show the emotion or feed off the emotion the way Joel does. And I think that's why everybody in Philly loves Joel the way they did through the early years, is because Joel bleeds with every single play. And Philly loves that, right? Ben's not like that. Ben is an introvert when it comes to showing his emotions on the court. And I think Philly wants a little bit more of that. But the one thing we get from Ben is we're getting a guy who's continuing to grow. And I look at his ceiling, the kid is going to get so much better offensively. And I think that, listen, the threes are a little bit ridiculous, but it's okay. He's trying to get better. You see progress. And Giannis didn't come into the league where he can get a jumper. You look at a guy like Jason Kidd. He's the perfect example for me when you say, who's a superstar? Who became a superstar? Who found his way in the league? Jason Kidd, everybody joked that you got to call him Aston because he had no J coming into the league. And then by the end of his career, he had a consistent jumper. And I think Ben can develop into something like that over time. But we forget how young he is. We forget, like, when he was drafted, what we wanted, what were the expectations. And when we compare, you know, it's really unfair, but this is what we do. When we compare to picks in the top three, like a Jason Tatum and where they're at and where Andrew Wiggins is at, if you compare some of those guys in the top three the last few years, I would take Ben. And Tatum's a superstar, but I'd still take Ben because I know Ben's going to get better, and he does things on the defensive end that Tatum does not do. And I think the future is really bright with Ben. We just got to be patient with the kid. And again, there are growing pains, and I get frustrated a lot. And you know what you're going to see in the playoffs is teams are going to go after the Sixers' weakness, and that is forcing Ben to shoot the ball. That's on the coaching staff, where you have 82 games for him to find a way to shoot the ball from the outside. Mm-hmm. And I put that on the coaching staff as well.
Absolutely.
Kevin, has it surprised you at all with Al Horford coming over from Boston, what he was there, a defensive stopper, how much he frustrated Joel Embiid when he covered him on the defensive end, and the cerebral player that he is, that he struggled so much this year? And if so, if it surprised you, why do you think it is?
Well, because you're talking about a guy that's in the league for over,
11 years, I think, yeah.
Years, that has always been a starter. Right. Okay, he's always been a starter. He's always knows his role. And then he comes here and you know, again, I put this on the coaching staff and understanding spacing. It shouldn't be 50 games before they figure out, hey, let's try him off the bench. Like, the first part of the season is, hey, let's just try to figure out our personnel. Let's not forget that I think Elton made the move for two reasons. Number one, hey, it's insurance if Joel is not 100% healthy. Right?
Yeah.
And number two, we need depth and we need height when it comes to potentially facing the Bucks in the playoffs. And I think that when you can't figure out spacing, that falls right on the coaching staff on trying to figure that out. That falls on, hey, listen, we are going to continue to work with us. And I think it just came to a point of frustration. And now I don't understand the dynamic that fans have with Horford. Like, because I think, you know, the booing yesterday with Horford every time he touches the ball, I'm trying to understand. I know, like, you know, a couple weeks ago when he made those comments, you know, the timing, you're like, what are you doing, Al? Like, you don't need to tell anybody there's issues in the locker room right now and then just leave it at that. That's a hand grenade.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to let go of that because we're going to need Al when it comes to matchups in the playoffs. Because especially when you see the half, and Bob, you know this, it's all, everything's going to get, the court's going to get shrunk in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you're going to need a guy that's going to be able to shoot some shots on the outside. It is not Al's fault that he was brought in here and things were not figured out when it comes to roles and what we're going to do. But there was a reason why he was brought in here. As insurance, just in case if Joel's not 100% come playoff time. And we saw that last year. So I think that I don't understand why this dynamic has changed a little bit, but we as a city kind of get stuck on one thing and then we just, we get obsessed with it. And I think we need to let go of this Al Horford thing right now.
Like, I think, and speaking with Kevin DeGondi of ESPN, the thing that gets to me is like he took $109 million to be here. I talked to him a couple of months back. And he was shocked that Philadelphia offered him this much money. He had no, he did not think for a second he was going to end up in Philly. And then they said, hey, how about $109 million? And he's like, well, okay, I guess that's what I'm going to do. That's kind of how it played out. At least that's the impression he gave me. But this is only going to work if we get behind it. And look, he is struggling right now. He's been demoted to a bench player, which I know is not how it's presented to him when it comes to Brett Brown. But more or less every player knows what it is. I think if more people get on him as fans, and I include myself with this, then that's not going to help anybody in the success of this team.
You're right. Listen, he didn't come to Philadelphia. I mean, if someone's going to give you $109 million and you're not expecting it, no one's going to blame you for taking it. I don't think he was expecting that, hey, they hadn't figured out my role here and trying to understand what I'm trying to do. And then I think also there were times where he was trying a little too hard. But let's look at that window of those nine games when Joel was out and Al fit in. I thought Al fit in quite well with what this team was trying to do as they were running the floor, right? And again, there's a reason why you're Brett Brown and you're the head coach of this team. You need to figure it out. And if you can't figure it out now, then you're not going to figure it out. That's the thing to me.
Okay.
Don't waste 60 games in a whole season.
All right. I just got a couple more quick ones for you. I know I appreciate you giving us some more time today. Flyers, I was going to ask you whether or not they're a playoff team, but they're a playoff team, man. And especially after last night, the way they were able to fight back in that win, this team's going to the playoffs.
They are. And it's exciting. And honestly, I think the fan base deserves it. Again, consistency between the pipes has always been the story. My viewpoint has always been one thing. Just get in. Because we have seen through the years, if you get in and you're a hot team, no one wants to face you. And I don't think the Flyers are a team that I don't think anybody wants to face. Because if they get in the playoffs, they're going to be really hungry. I'm excited about it because, honestly, it's been a while since we feel like, okay, listen, this is a team that I think the city identifies with. They're hungry, and look at how the Sixers were 2 years ago, right? And the city lost its mind because they were a bunch of guys that were hungry. They didn't come in every night expecting anything. And I don't think this Flyers team comes into every game every night saying, "Oh, we're expecting to win." No, we're going to grind you, and that's a good thing. And I actually think that works in their favor heading into the playoffs.
Kevin, who goes deeper in the playoffs, Flyers or the Sixers?
Oh man.
I asked the tough questions, Kev.
What a nightmare scenario here on when you look at the Sixers when it comes to drama. I mean, I think nationally people are like, oh my God, this is so tasty if the Sixers potentially face the Celtics in the first round or they face the Raptors. I mean, the Heat in the first round, yeah. Jimmy Butler. But you know what? If they want to win a championship, I think that they're going to win that first round regardless because I think they can beat the Celtics. I think they can beat the Heat. It's going to come down to two guys, and it's always been the story. Those two guys got to figure it out together on the court, and that head coach has got to figure out all the other parts work and the right substitutions, which I think have been driving some people crazy. I like Alec Burks. I think he's going to help them with offense, but they've got to get that defense down. Because that's the staple here. That defense is going to win them at least two playoff games. And the question is it going to win them a playoff game in round one and round two or just round one? Because I think this team still has the chance to go to the Eastern Conference Finals.
All right. And then most importantly, above anything else, speaking with Kevin DeGondi of ESPN, your impressions of Aaron McKee, first year coaching our Temple Owls. How are you liking Coach McKee so far?
Mark, I love him. I went to school with Aaron. He takes me back to the days of Coach Chaney. And you know what Aaron's going to do, and Fran did a fantastic job, that transition from Coach Chaney. That's not an easy thing when you're replacing a legend, especially you know, where Chaney, you know, Chaney's fingerprints are all over Temple, or were when Fran took over. Aaron's gonna make sure that the kids that come to Temple are gonna be tough kids. And when I say tough kids, mentally tough kids, where when I grew up and I was following Temple hoops and I thought, you know, in the 90s, you didn't want to go face Temple. When the Dukes of the world did not want to come to Philadelphia to face Temple. And I think Villanova has that identity. I think Aaron's going to bring that back, where you are coming to Philadelphia. You don't want to face Temple. Whether Temple's going to win or not, it's going to be 40 minutes of, you know, not stealing this from Nolan Richardson, but 40 minutes of hell. And I think Aaron's going to find those kids that are going to make sure over time, hey, you want to be here, you want to stay here, you want to win here, we're going to make sure that whoever comes here is going to have a hard time getting a W in North Philly. That's what I can't wait to see in the next couple of years when he gets the guys that he wants when it comes to recruiting.
Kevin, I couldn't be more jealous of you, because like, you went to school with Aaron McKee, I went to school with Marty Collins. Like, you clearly won that battle.
Marty was the man, too.
sure.
John, you guys got to go. I get it. You're up against the break.
No. Go ahead. If you got something, I'm not going to cut Kevin Agandi off.
No, I was lucky. I'll say this real quick. I was lucky, you know, in the mid-90s where, you know, I saw Eddie Jones, Aaron McKee, and then, you know, towards the back end of my time there, it was Karcher, you know, Lynn Greer, Pepe Sanchez. And when you're around the program and you see some of the guys that come back, and you know, I'm a late 80s guy, where my brother got me involved with Temple basketball, with Macon, Vreeswijk, Howie Evans, Tim Perry, Ramon Rivas, and those guys. That stuff runs deep with me. My passion for Temple hoops. I love everything about that program. Mm-hmm. And to have Aaron around the program, to see Mark, to see Jason Ivey, it's a great thing. And I can't wait to see what type of guys that they're going to bring in the next few years, because it takes me back to my days with John and God bless Coach Chaney.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kevin, you know, on a more serious note, I guess, a more personal note, the story came out almost a month and a half ago now about you signing an extension with ESPN. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy, couldn't happen to a better guy or a more talented guy. You do a phenomenal job of representing our city, and kind of, like I said, you keep it almost like a double agent. You keep your Philadelphia preference and passion, and you carry it well on the national stage, my friend. So again, congrats on that deal.
Mark, I appreciate the kind words. Thank you, guys. And listen, understand that in every newsroom conversation, my head sticks up, and I start talking about Philly, and everybody knows. So I always represent us up here, no matter what. Whether it's good or bad, I will make sure I'll be real with it.
You're the man. Kevin Agandi, ESPN, Temple Zone, Philadelphia Zone. Kevin Agandi. Thanks, Kevin.
Fellas, be good.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.